You're listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
So we interrupt your World Cup broadcast, everyone, for a Tennis.com podcast here with Steve Tigner. I'm Ed McGrogan. Steve, it's, whenever actually World Cup Euro comes around, it's also Wimbledon time. That's something that you and I notice at the press room over there quite a bit, as you're going to see dueling televisions of soccer, tennis going on there. You will be going over in just a couple days to Wimbledon. We were there last year. I mean, I guess just to start off, what are you looking forward to most, the 2014 edition after, quite a historic 2013 tournament?
Yeah, I think, first of all, there's, Murray coming back to start the tournament. That should be a great way to open it after him winning last year, and just we'll see how he reacts to that and his current situation coaching wise and just the whole atmosphere around him returning. Wimbledon has a great tradition of the champion opening the tournament opening the play on center court on the first day. So that that's a great way to kick it off. Also, this just seems to be a really pretty open tournament to me on both sides, men's and women's. I can't really think of any definite favorites, and that's pretty rare, I think, these days.
It's especially rare for Wimbledon in particular. I think that's a tournament that is kind of held to chalk for so long. It's very rare to see sort of a surprise winner, but then again, last year we had a very surprising women's champion, Bartoli, and you could certainly say to some degree a surprise that any Brit finally won it in Murray. Murray had so much experience, I think, coming into finally breaking down that wall there. I actually wanted to mention something about Murray and see what you thought, since you often write about really the press, the fans scene over at Wimbledon is, now that there isn't that that curse, really, if you will. I'm thinking back to like the Red Sox, really, of 2004, that broke a similarly long hex of trying to win a title. What do you see? Do you think the environment, the atmosphere, will be any different now that a British man has won this tournament in 80 odd years?
Yeah, I think usually when you were there and you talked about Tim Henman or Andy Murray, if you brought them up with anybody in London, there was, a little bit of hope, but also mostly skepticism that they would never do it. That, that they, people wondered why they got their hopes up, that they would be runner up or losing the semis or losing some horrible way, that they were, it was destined to not happen. And now it's happened. So that part will be gone. So that, in a way, it's totally something new for the atmosphere, I think. I think Murray, 2 years ago, Murray played the final, and he wasn't even really the crowd favorite with Federer. I think it was pretty split down the middle. Last year, he was clearly the crowd favorite. I think he slowly won over the crowd in England, and now he comes back as a real winner. And this is something completely new. So that skepticism will be gone. We'll see. Maybe it'll be a little bit more like the Olympics when he won at the Olympics, when there was pretty much straightforward support for him. Maybe we'll see, but maybe there'll be something. I think there'll be a little different atmosphere than we've seen for a British player.
Yeah, it's gonna be I think this all really ties into what you're saying also, just kind of about the unknown for this Wimbledon, and I also tie back kind of before we get into this year, I think back to what happened last year at Wimbledon, how it was I think you called it like Wimbledon, a crazy, just a Black Wednesday on the court where Federer and Nadal go down the span of a couple of days, among other big upsets. It was kind of a tournament of upheaval, even though by the end you had the two, you had obviously two of the four top men playing in the final. It's really a different dynamic, I think, to this year's Wimbledon for so many reasons. And you mentioned just a moment ago that there doesn't seem to be those favorites on really either side of the draw, and you know that's strange to say in this period of the Big Four, especially on the men's side.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the men, especially, it's sort of a moment that where there's no favorite. It just sort of happens to come about because this tournament is just after the French Open. Federer, Murray, Nadal, and Djokovic, none of them are injured that I know of. None of them right now that I know of are seriously injured. We'll see about Nadal. But each right now comes in with a little bit of, you know, would you really pick that person to win? Rafa comes after just winning the French Open. The last 2 years he's come here and lost in the second round and the first round, so it's hard to think of him winning this tournament. Djokovic comes after a pretty bad, disappointing loss in the French Open final, so it's hard to see him. Federer obviously has won this 7 times, and I would say this might be his last best chance to win a Grand Slam, but he's also 32. I don't know if you outright pick Federer to win this tournament. And Murray is the defending champion, but he's still fourth in that list of four. So it's an interesting moment where the Big Four are all there, but it almost feels like there's a little bit of a void as to, you know, who would you really get behind among those four? And that's been really rare. So that's interesting in itself.
Yeah, let's dig into, I think, really each of these guys here in a sense. Well, first off, just to kind of address Rafa and Novak, I mean, you know, just from a viewing perspective, a fan perspective, you know, even a storytelling perspective, you know, do you want to see, for example, the next chapter of Nadal and Djokovic unfold at Wimbledon after what we've witnessed pretty recently in the French Open? I mean, do you sense that? I know we don't really play favorites, but I think you certainly have preferences as to how you know what might make for some of the best matches at Wimbledon. You know, do you necessarily think that this really shifting rivalry between Nadal and Djokovic really you know? Do we want to see those two kind of at the end, or do you want to see something maybe a little different this time?
Well, yeah, the French Open match was disappointing. You know, I think it wasn't really it wasn't one of their best matches, and maybe at this moment maybe that rivalry is a little tired as far as fans go. Of course, they could play a Wimbledon final that could be really good, and they'd be back in business. You know, they usually have good matches, and they're usually better than that French Open match, but right at this moment, no, I agree. You know, I would think it would be nice to see something different as far as from a fan perspective, whether it's somebody outside the Big Four, whether that's Federer getting back in there, whether that's Murray doing it again. I don't think I'm particularly, you know, I would be happy to see them play a final, and if it was a great final. But right now, I don't want to see another final like that French Open final they just played.
To Federer, you said that this might be his last realistic chance at finally winning one more slam. This is also a story that is the cover story, really, for this month in Tennis Magazine. We waited for Roger quite a while to get to number 17. It happened at Wimbledon after a pretty extended stretch. I think he went from the 2010 Aussie Open to 2012 Wimbledon. It certainly feels like a long time ago, 2 years ago now, with Federer that summer winning over Murray, and then from that point on, Murray turning the tables at the Olympics. You know, what is your thought on where Federer is now? This has been, I think, a year for him where for the most part, I don't think you can really fault Federer for how he's played this year. He's gotten back into the top four. He's just won a grass tournament, and he won Doha earlier this year, and has beaten, obviously, some of the best names. He's beaten Djokovic and Murray this year.
Yeah, he's played well. He played well at the beginning of the year. I wouldn't say he's coming in with a ton of momentum after, he's had twins again. He had to take some time off. He didn't have a good French Open. He is in the top four, and he's won that tournament in Ala. And he has had a better year. He's definitely had a better year than last year. That's why I say this is a good chance for him. But when you look at history and players in their 30s winning Grand Slams, I think people like Andre Agassi and Jimmy Connors, they sort of, you know, it makes us think that players can do well and win Grand Slams deep into their 30s, when those two guys, neither of them won a Grand Slam after 32, which is Federer's age. You can, the precedent seems to be that you can play, do well into your 30s, get to Grand Slam finals, get to Grand Slam semis, but winning Grand Slams is a different thing. 32 seems to be the limit in the Open era, and Federer's there. So, and this is Wimbledon, his favorite tournament, tournament he aims for, his, you know, a surface that he always plays well on. The other guys, none of the other guys are really dominant right now. So, this has to be what I would think would be his best chance to win a slam. And, you know, he's done enough to put himself in a reasonable position. The one problem, the one thing I think that would be really difficult is for him to beat Nadal. I think he can beat Djokovic on a good day. He can definitely, you know, he's shown he can still beat Murray. Nadal is a tougher ask. He hasn't beaten him in a while. Even on grass, it's a tough matchup, as we know. So that's the one thing that I think he would need some help with.
And what will be interesting with those two is it's obviously been a long time since 2008, which was the last time they've played there. And you know, there is obviously a chance this year that they could meet, and it wouldn't necessarily be in the final, depending on the draw. Of course, there's the adjusting grass court rankings. You have to kind of have to see where players come about on that scale as well. But it would be pretty weird to see Federer and Nadal play at Wimbledon and not be in a final after, you know, playing in 06 through 08. But that is a possibility this year, and I think that's even a little more that we could perhaps look forward to, because I think a semifinal between those two, if that's how it shook out, doesn't seem out of the question. But who knows? Nadal would probably have the harder road potentially, the way he has looked on grass, as you mentioned.
Federer could get benefit. There's a good chance he might not have to play Nadal, judging by Rafa's on grass the last couple of years. He also lost his first match after the French Open on grass. The one thing I would say about Federer that I haven't really, that seems a little ominous, is the way he has struggled to serve out sets. He struggled against Gulbis. He even struggled in the final, Gulbis at the French Open, and he lost. He struggled even in the final against Alejandro Faya, and he won that match. But there's just a little bit of, that's been a little bit of a problem, and I do think that'll be something he'll need to overcome, and could be a problem for him at Wimbledon, even if he's playing well.
Right. The last man we haven't mentioned yet to any great degree, Murray. Now, I say that about the papers not having as much to talk about with finally having a British champion. Well, they kind of have a lot more to talk about this year as well, with Murray hiring Amelie Mauresmo as coach, and so that is going to be ramped up, obviously, to great degrees with the papers over there. But you know, let me hear, I think, your thoughts on this coaching dynamic. We had a piece from Pete about this, Pete Bodo, on the site. I think really pointing toward, you know, it's really about what Pete said was it was more about how Mauresmo's experience as not only a coach but a player coming into this dynamic. Now, when Murray had Lendl in his corner, you know, Lendl was like Murray in the sense that he, you know, he got to those finals, he eventually overcame them and kind of flourished after that. Mauresmo, certainly not a player who you're going to remember alongside Lendl in terms of that. Pete really did remind us that, you know, her career was a lot of missed opportunities despite winning two Grand Slams. But that all said, you know, how do you see this relationship working out, maybe in the short and the long term?
Yeah, I guess people forget that Lendl lost a lot of Grand Slam finals too. He lost 11 of them. So I don't know if that is a big difference. Mauresmo is definitely not the same type of coach. I think Murray, I think he liked her. I think he liked talking to her. He was comfortable. He's comfortable being coached by a woman because of his mother. He was coached by his mother. I think he just got along with Mauresmo. Maybe it was a little easier than with Lendl. Maybe he wanted to have a little easier type of give and take. maybe there's a little bit less of a coach-student relationship with he and Mauresmo. They're closer. She's younger. The one thing that is odd to me that he would do this now at this obviously the biggest time of the year would sort of do a coaching experiment in the middle of the grass court season going into Wimbledon when if he doesn't win Wimbledon, it's going to look like this was a mistake, whereas obviously you can't expect her to have a big effect on his game in a matter of 1 month. So that seems a little, that I'm not sure why he would choose now to do that, but maybe I think the main thing with her, from what I can gather listening to him, is that he just liked talking to her and felt good about the back and forth. So we'll see. It's just a little unfortunate, I think, that there's now suddenly a lot of pressure on him to win Wimbledon, to match what he did last year, to make this coaching decision look like a smart move.
Yeah, he didn't make things any easier, I think, for sure, in that respect there. Let's move to the women's side here, with that note, and let's start with Serena Williams, who now for the past few slams has taken some earlier exits. This has not thus far been one of her utterly dominant years that we've witnessed in the past couple of years from her, above 30 in age. And I think we're perhaps a little perplexed of where to place Serena. Certainly not off the favorite mana, but really just kind of her status in relation to everyone else on the tour. And it wasn't even in this case this year we've seen that it's not an issue of her having trouble with one figure player like Azarenka in some instances a couple of years ago. It's certainly not Sharapova when you consider how they're head to head, but she's been troubled by some other other players that we might not have thought of before. Latest case, Garbine Muguruza in the French Open. So, what are your thoughts on Serena coming this term? We actually haven't seen her in a little while.
Yeah, I think it's different now. Up until now, for maybe for the last 2 years, you would go into a Grand Slam and say, can anybody beat Serena? I don't think anybody's going to think that now. Three of the last four Grand Slams, she hasn't made the quarterfinals, so you really can't say that she's unbeatable or... And I think the big difference is the way that Muguruza beat her. Serena wasn't injured. She obviously didn't play well, but Muguruza, played well and won that match 6-2, 6-2. That's something, score-wise, that's the worst loss for Serena. And also, she was just outplayed by a player who wasn't even ranked in the top 20. So I think that's what makes this different. You can't say, in some of the past, her past losses that she was hurt, even in the Australian Open against Ivana, but she had a back problem. This time, there really has been nothing like that. I think Serena is still, if you're going to pick one person, she's still the favorite, but there isn't this overwhelming sense that she it's virtually impossible to beat her. She was beaten in the fourth round at Wimbledon last year. So that makes it different. And if we think there's sort of a, it's hard to pick them if there's no real favorite on the men's side. I mean, the women's side is much more the case with Serena currently in the current status that she is. I mean, nobody else really sticks out. It's even more sort of wide open than the men's, I would say.
Well, who of the rest would you choose to, I think, talk about to some great degree for who could take advantage of that wide open nature?
Well, it's tough. I mean, it's just like the men's. It's like, is there anybody you would really say, that's the person I'm going to back? Li Na lost in the first round of the French. She'll be the number two seed. Simona Halep is ranked number three. She's never been past the second round at Wimbledon. Sharapova has struggled. Wimbledon is her favorite tournament. But she struggled to back up the French Open. She lost early last year. Azarenka is just coming back. Radwanska, you'd like to think she certainly has been in the final and the semi last year, so you'd think that she has a chance, but she's never won a Grand Slam. So, those are really the top names. So I don't think there's anybody that I would just like on the men's side, there's a bunch of possibilities, but there's nobody that that really stands out.
I'd be a little remiss to not mention one player who has done amazingly well at both slams thus far this year, Jeannie Bouchard. Two semifinal runs, clay and over in Australia. Certainly a young career, and we have not certainly seen much of her on grass to have any real definitive take. But, you know, I guess besides that, you know, what has she done so well in the first two slams of this year, and really just overall as a player? Because I think we want to certainly watch out for her for a potential upset bid for of great nature here, but yeah, these two results in Melbourne and Paris cannot be discounted.
Yeah, I think Bouchard has, you know, there's two things I think that are really good about her game is certainly the mental aspects. Her composure reminds me a little bit of Chris Evert's in a way. She will stay composed, play with her head, doesn't let her emotions get the best of her often. And that, you know, that's half the game. And also, she's not the most natural player. She's not as natural mover or hitter as, say, Halep. And she will, and Bouchard can be guilty of attacking too much, but I like the fact that she just keeps coming back to it. She doesn't get afraid or doesn't typically get tentative. She did a little bit against Sharapova at the French Open, but that was somewhat understandable, and she had a chance to win. But otherwise, she just, you know, she sort of keeps at it, keeps at what her game plan. And, you know, I think that's served her well, and, you know, the mental aspect has really helped. And she lost yesterday on grass in this tune-up tournament, but last year she beat Ivanovic badly at Wimbledon. So I think her game will translate to grass. You know, most players' games translate on all surfaces now, it seems, and I think that's true for her. So I would look for, you know, for her, she'll be an interesting to see where she is in the draw.
Yeah, I think this and all the things we've mentioned just kind of set up for, you know, like I said, a Wimbledon of a lot of unknowns. But, you know, I always say this about Wimbledon is that it is the slam where it hardly ever disappoints in terms, you know, no matter really who comes out of it. I think back to really, you know, I go back to last year and, you know, you and I were both there actually. And, you know, I think who would have thought that what ended up happening on both the men's and women's side would give us really still such a memorable tournament. And this is to a degree taking Murray out of the picture here, but you think back to really the Bartoli and Lisicki runs up there. You know, the final was not great by any means, but, you know, what happened to bring us to that point? This tournament really is what I think all players, regardless of nationality, regardless of preference for surface, and I think, you know, Nadal might be the best example of someone who, you know, as much of a clay, you know, god as he is, you know, he still talks about Wimbledon as really the ultimate. You know, Djokovic, when he was asked about a couple of his, you know, his great career accomplishments, you know, the one Wimbledon trophy was, you know, certainly not lost on him as such a pivotal moment in his career. And that shows in all the matches, and it's I think far and away still the best tournament in tennis, and I don't think you should really expect anything less in a few days' time.
Yeah, I think if you're a young player and you're pretending you're playing a tournament, nobody pretends like they're playing the Australian Open, right? Everybody pretends they're playing Wimbledon. But also as far as the wide open aspect, it is last year's tournament, which became really wide open, is interesting because once a lot of seeds go out, each match becomes, even early in the tournament, becomes much more interesting because, you know, you really have no idea who's going to continue on to possibly win Wimbledon like Bartoli did. It turned out that the quarterfinal between Bartoli and Sloane Stephens, which was close, might have been the biggest of the tournament, and somebody like Sloane Stephens could have won Wimbledon. So that, in a way, I don't think you can really lose at these Grand Slams, even if the big names go out early.
Yeah, and at Wimbledon, you will be having quite a bit to say on all this. first ball in. Steve will be continuing with that series of ours, but with a lot more coming from the tabs over there, and some great photography from us as well, among many other things from the All England Club. So I will be here this year. Steve will be there, and everybody else will be focused on the tennis as always. So tune back in throughout this week for preview coverage, and of course during the championships, really round the clock stuff. Steve, we'll talk to you over there, and I am Ed McGrogan. Thank you for listening to the Tennis.com podcast.
You've been enjoying Tennis.com's weekly podcast. Thanks for listening. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.